Do you ever feel like you're always on? Your phone is blowing up with notifications, you have commitments to friends and family, and not to mention work. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. It's a crisp and refreshing beer that even tells you it's cold when the mountains on the bottles and cans turn blue. When I need to hit reset, I grab a Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/BlueWire. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to a brand new episode during the second half of Major League Baseball of Swings and Mishes. I'm your co-host and producer, Jeremy Taché, joined by Craig Mish as we head into the second half of Major League Baseball. Craig, how's it going with you on this fine Friday morning?
Oh, I'm doing well. Looking forward to watching a couple of games tonight. Marlins and Phillies, second half of the season gets underway. And with a lot of questions, definitely going into the second half. So I'm excited to get it going and see where this takes us.
And we'll get right into it with those questions. Like you said, the Marlins and Phillies play a doubleheader today. The Marlins have 13 games before July 30th and the MLB trade deadline before the New York Yankees come to town. It's four in Philadelphia. Obviously, the Phillies are in second place in that NL East. Three in Washington, the fourth place team in the NL East. So seven straight against division teams. Then home for four against San Diego. And then two at Baltimore, one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. That's 13 games total before the deadline. The Marlins are currently nine games back of first place in the NL East. Obviously, the wild card is sort of out of consideration with how great the NL West is. So that's where the Marlins need to catch up. They have seven straight against division opponents here, Craig. And the Atlanta Braves made a trade yesterday to look like buyers to acquire Jock Peterson, an outfielder from the Chicago Cubs, who we all know very well from his years with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Craig, what are your thoughts about where the Marlins stand right now and what needs to happen over the next couple of weeks before this trade deadline on July 30th?
Yeah, there's a lot happening with the Marlins, and I think that the next few days are going to really determine their full course of action here. I think that after this Philadelphia series and Washington, they're going to have a much better idea as to, you know, kind of where they're at. As far as from what I'm hearing, it does seem like what everything that I've been saying the last couple of months, or, you know, really the last month, I would say, is that they really want to see this all the way through until the 30th before making any final decisions here. And I know that that's frustrating because you want to kind of know where they're at one way or the other. I think I've made it pretty clear. I think I know where they're at. I think they need to move pieces for sure. But look, you know, baseball is all about deadlines and it's all about making decisions at the very last minute. And I think that Miami still kind of holds out hope that they'll go, you know, 13-0 in the next 13 games. You know, sure. I mean, I guess anything is possible. So you have to leave that window open for it. But, you know, again, I'll say this. It feels like I've said this now for weeks, is that the Braves, I don't know where the Braves are at, but the Phillies and the Mets are going to add players. Like Miami, the Marlins are going to, regardless of how they feel about their season, they're going to be fighting for the same assets at the trade deadline. And those other teams are going to fight. And so without some sort of epic 13-0 run or 12-1 run, and even with that, honestly, I think that Miami is probably at this point best served to start focusing in on 2022. Which means looking at the assets that they have and determining what they're worth. And they do have some really viable assets for some other teams. The team, this club is flawed in 2021. I'm sorry to say they dug themselves a really big hole, but that's not to say there haven't been really good performances that they could build on for next year. So hopefully that is the case. But to me, it still goes all back to that Pirates series where that road trip where they lost 3 out of 4, they dug themselves just a big hole. And to be 10 games under 500 and to look at the division as only being 9 games out, that's not the proper way to look at it because your team just isn't that good. So regardless, I mean, you could still be 5 games under, but what are you playing for? I just hope that the realism kind of sinks in over the next week or two, barring basically the best stretch of baseball in Florida or Miami Marlins history. Like, if that happens, let's have a different conversation. But a 500 or a 9-4, I mean, those things are just not good enough to stay in the race. And I hope that that's what their vision is in a week or two. But right now, it's fair if they want to hold out that 1% Fangraphs hope or 0% Fangraphs hope. That
you know, there's a fun memory that just popped into mind from a previous podcast of ours, specifically when you talk about going on a run and, you know, toward a trade deadline here. It reminded me of when Brad Penny was on our podcast, what, probably a year and a half ago now. And he talked about the Marlins going on the road and going on a run that brought them back into the wild card mix in 2003, and how all the fans then showed up at the stadium. And from there on out, it was this party. And I look at the Marlins and I go, okay, you know, they're out of it for all intents and purposes right now. Like you said, they're 9 games back. Heck, if they would have just won those games against the Pirates, maybe we're having a very different style of conversation in terms of where the Marlins are at and where they're in it. But when you have 7 straight games against division opponents here in a bunched up division, going something like 6-1 isn't just the benefit of, oh, we're creeping back toward the top. It's also we're hurting the teams in our division. So while it will take a miracle run here for the Marlins over these next, you know, 13 games, if in the next 5 or 6, you know, they're playing good ball, maybe at least those games against San Diego can be something to look forward to, which is all we really want, right, as it heads toward the deadline. But the realism is the most important part, understanding where the Marlins are at that trade deadline, because like you mentioned, Craig, going into 2022, you can't have mortgaged an opportunity to be better next season for the slim chance of competing for the division this season. This season is, whether we like it or not, they are 11 games under 500 right now. And so in turn, it has been a bit underachieving in terms of the record. And you can't leave yourself hung out to dry for next year with the slim hope of this season turning itself around.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. They just have to learn and understand that they went into the season with somewhat of a flawed roster. And, you know, you can't really count on players coming back quickly from injuries, and that's been a part of it too. But you know, look, the Atlanta Braves and the Phillies at one point, and the Mets, I'll say it again, and the Nationals, by the way, have all taken it in the gut and on the chin, and those teams have found a way to be better than Miami. I mean, that's just that's just the truth of the matter here. But there's definitely a lot of building blocks for 2022, and
certainly.
And I think that I would like to see some young players like they did with Jesus Sanchez and Move Dickerson. Like, I would like to see that happen also at first base too, and we can get into that as well. I'd like to see some of that. And I think that the organization is optimistic, maybe more optimistic than some others. And I wouldn't say it's to a fault, because we have not been seen victim. We have not been a victim to that yet as fans and as media. I haven't called them out and said wrong choice. But I assure you that when the deadline comes, if they don't move players and they're still sitting 7 games back or 6, right, or whatever it is, that day will come. But, you know, look, overall, it was, you know, this week was a nice week to just kind of chill. Sit back. The draft also this past week was very compelling to see what they did there. So we'll get into that as well. But no doubt the big league side for the next 2 weeks is very important to see what the results are.
Well, and as those next couple of weeks go on, obviously what we've prefaced all of this with is the MLB trade deadline. So as that trade deadline approaches, the guy that we've been focusing that conversation around has been Starling Marte, who you, Craig, have been on top of the Marte extension beat from the very beginning. You're the one who brought up the conversation. So where do things stand at the moment with Starling Marte and the Miami Marlins, again, as we approach the trade deadline?
Okay, so, I know that people are going to poke fun, and I understand that, but this is part of doing what we're doing. This is the biggest story, I think, between now and the 30th, to kind of see what happens with Marte. So, look, so they offered him a contract extension back, I think it was maybe a couple of weeks ago, which was right after he expressed his desire to stay. Mm-hmm. Now, a podcast ago, I had said that I was hoping that it wasn't due to me asking him and him saying that he wanted to stay, that that was the reason why they offered him a contract extension, you know? And I don't know, it may have been because of that. I got it. Now that I'm sort of gathering enough information here, and there, and I know that no one in the Marlins organization is going to admit that, but I'm sort of starting to think that based on a lot of the information that I've gotten, which to me, that's not right. You know, that should have been done before Marte, you know, goes to Marte. I mean, I'm happy that that happened and it shows that they're interested in signing him, but that a large percentage on my percentage meter is leaning toward that being the case. So the offer that they made is not going to be acceptable at this point. They chose to use the time off the last few days to talk a little bit more about it. And I believe they've gone back and forth. I'm not sure exactly where it stands, but Marte is going to want four years. Marte is probably going to get 4 years in the offseason, and Miami does not appear willing to give Marte a four-year contract. I'm not even certain that Miami is willing to give Marte a three-year contract without like a two-year with an option. I can't say that I'm certain on that as well at this point. So they have a couple of weeks to get it done. At this point, I can't say that anyone is optimistic that this deal is going to get done. Marte has reiterated he would like to stay, but the feeling that I'm getting is that the Marte side, the preference all along, even before the season and will be after, is that to do negotiations in the off season. And that right. would have applied this past off season, and it will apply to the next off season, which is coming in October, November, December, et cetera. So that being said, the Marlins are going to have to make a decision coming up here on the 30th, whether or not they choose to trade Marte, or they just roll with him, hoping that they can get an extension done before the end of the year, or maybe even keep Marte and offer him the qualifying offer and get that draft pick if he turns it down, which he will. So that is obviously not a smart move if they choose to go that direction. I believe that they should be trading him on the 30th.
Yep.
It seems as though this is something that should have started a while ago. I think there's just not enough time to get it done. And it's not a comfortable situation to have a player under a contract negotiation in season. So I think that the last few days, I think that that was kind of going on where they're, trying to figure it out, but they're not getting anywhere close. And I don't think the Marlins are going to step up and pay what Marte honestly is worth. I don't right. think they're going to do that. It's sad to say. So I would look for him to be traded on the 30th. I'll continue to follow this along. I've spoken personally and privately to Starling a couple of different times. I want to make it clear that the last time that I spoke to him last week, he expressed to me that at this point, it's just kind of, hey, let's see where they're at. Let's see if something gets done. But basically, Craig, we're just like not going to do this conversation every day. And he right. didn't say that to me, but it felt like exasperation. Like, okay, like I said what I had to say. Now it's time for them to decide if I'm going to stay or not. And if I'm not, then I'll be traded. So coming up next week, in the Herald, I'll have the teams that are interested in Marte. There definitely have been a lot of teams calling. There's a couple in particular that I think that have a better chance than some others. So when we get there next week, we will do that. But I want to still sort of explore yeah. what that where those possibilities exist at this point for Starling Marte. So I wish I had better news on that front. Unfortunately, I do not. And I think that Marte at this point is prepared to be traded on the 30th, barring, again, some Marlins offer that I am not seeing at this point on the table. So that's the 3-minute story on Starling Marte.
Oh, man. And the frustration. So let me move past the side of for Marlins fans who are frustrated that that contract offer won't be there, the 4-year deal or whatever is necessary.
I don't think so. But again, they
for the time being,
yeah. And again, they had not offered him any extension, and then he says that he wants to stay, and then all of a sudden, oh, here's an extension.
Right.
So look, maybe there's a chance of that. I personally don't think that's going to happen. I'll be wildly impressed if Miami goes to 4 years, but I think there's also a conversation to be had. Well, what does the AAV look like in a 4-year deal too? I mean, the Marlins have to be careful of that as well, but I can tell you again, where it stands right now is not close to where it's going to need to be. And I also am of the opinion that while the Marlins have stepped up a little bit in terms of at least opening up the conversation, they have not done nearly enough to put an offer in front of Marte that he is going to be willing to keep. I mean, it has got to be more than what they're at, or maybe they're not going to. And this was just for this podcast to talk about, but it's, sure, it is not close right now.
At least it gave us content, huh?
No, we did. We got content,
I mean,
out of it.
But very seriously, when you think about an extension for Marte and just to advocate for the player in terms of what he's meant to this team, the steadiness of Starling Marte in your lineup, even when he's slumping. Like, we've seen Starling Marte through one of the biggest slumps we've seen with the Miami Marlins still be able to produce, even in the midst of that worst slump. He's, you know, walking off with errors by the Dodgers because he's forcing the issue on the base pads. He's a tremendous center fielder, and the Marlins will not be the same team without him. So I am intrigued to see the plan. If he is out the door, who's going to play center field and where it's going to go from there, because that could lead to an August and September that, you know, have some question marks in center field, unless it's Duvall every day, I guess. But moving past the Starling Marte conversation, Craig, if we can do that at the moment, unless you have more to add.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll the only thing that I'll add,
sure,
is my commentary a little bit on this at the end. Mm-hmm. If you said, well, you know, what's the best course of action? What should they do? What would you do if you were in their shoes?
Right.
Look, I don't know. And I'm glad that I don't have to make that call. The only thing that I would tell you is that it would be foolish to be stubborn at the end of the month and say, oh, we think we're going to be able to get him done.
Agreed.
Before the end of the year. We're going to roll the dice. We're going to roll the dice here and see if we can get him done before the end of the year. And that's where, and that would be really, really foolish to do. And, you know, playing for that potential draft pick look at the draft picks the Marlins just had in that comp pick, the kid that they took, you're not going to see for what, 3-4 years,
yep,
high school catcher. And he may be very good, but we're not going to see him for years. Mm-hmm. So you have got to move this guy at the end of the month if you do not have an extension. That's all I got to say. I'm done with it.
I'm in full-hearted agreement with Craig here, just in terms of the timeline starts next season. Like, people expect the Marlins to start competing in a real way to at least be near a playoff team again next season. And if you lose Starling Marte for a player that will not contribute for years, that is not something that is helping you organizationally. You have to understand where your window is at. And so it should either be extension by the 30th or a trade by the 30th. I'm in total agreement with you there. That's the only course of action, at least in my mind. And obviously I know you feel the same way, Craig.
If you don't have players on the field with the right skills, whether it's breakaway speed or elite playmaking ability, you're going to have a tough time winning. The same goes for your business. Indeed is a fast, simple way to make sure you're hiring MVPs. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through April 30th. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applicants that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to claim your $75 credit before April 30th. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get on Team Shaq with WynnBET. We're playing parlays, boosting odds, and laying the wildest prop bets. Don't miss another game. Download the WynnBET sports betting app today.
Sign up today and win $200 in free bets when you place a $10 first-time wager on a straight bet or parlay. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
As we approach the trade deadline, are there other names, are there other Marlins that have been linked to anybody that are out there that we should be thinking about at the moment? Or is it just the sort of general, hey, you know who the veterans are on this team, you know who the guys are who produce, and you see who could fit in with some of these teams who are competing?
Unlike the Diamondbacks and unlike the Orioles and the Tigers and the Rockies, who the Marlins and the Rangers, who the Marlins are just above, by the way.
Yep.
The Better Marlins than all of them. Are not entertaining those same sort of trade talks right now. Again, going back to what we talked about in the first 10 minutes, this is the organization of eternal optimism in thinking that they're going to, you know, maybe go 12-1 or 13-0 and they're going to become buyers. So right now it is just a listening process at this point. There is really nothing serious to discuss in terms of players or trades or anything else. Of course, in a week or two from now,
right,
we're going to have a lot more clarity. But the one issue that I see that they need to resolve is when they traded Sergio Romo a couple of years ago to the Minnesota Twins and they acquired Lewin Diaz, I think we all knew that there was going to have to be development, especially on offense with Diaz. His defense is, many people feel, tremendous, inside and out, gold glove caliber. So that's really good news. And by the way, probably passable at a big league level, even if the bat isn't altogether there because his defense is so good. If you are building and have some other building blocks on the team at shortstop, at second base, in the outfield, if you have some other sluggers, you can pass with Lewin if he is not an all-star batter at this point in 2021. He's had a great year. Well, not a great year. I don't want to say that because some of the external numbers are not great, but it looks like his power has come along. I'll say that at AAA. But when this trade happened 2 years ago, I was told, wow, this is a, you know, game-changing trade, and you're going to see that we pulled it off. Have you looked at him in spring training? Have you seen these at-bats? Have you seen these plate appearances? This is a potential first baseman of the future. If I'm not mistaken, Don Mattingly threw a Carlos Delgado comparison on Lewin Diaz, who nobody agreed with at the time. But again, like you're hearing a potential big league starting player, maybe even an all-star. And I'm not poking fun at Donnie, but it's just he's not going to be Carlos Delgado, who is, you know, 400 home run, first baseman, all-star type player. But he could be very good. So what are we doing here? What are we doing here if that is the case? We are waiting way too long to see Lewin Diaz play every single day. And the reason why is because they have two players right now that are on the big league roster that are at first base that virtually cannot play anywhere else, in both Jesus Aguilar and Garrett Cooper. Cooper does physically play right field, but does not play it well and should not be in right field. And anytime he is out there, you're also risking an injury with a 6'5" type player. And you see it with Stanton, and you see it with Judge, and you see with, and all these big dudes in the outfield, they get hurt. Jose Canseco for many years, maybe a bad comp, but gets hurt. And the big guys get hurt in the outfield. And so because of that, And because there was no designated hitter, I'm giving the Marlins that mulligan in April and May and June. Like I'm willing to say right now that I'm okay with how this transpired, because again, they kind of got blindsided a little bit like everybody else. They were holding out hope for the DH. But as of July 16th, with 11 games under, there's almost no excuse anymore. Like, you have got to give Lewin Diaz 2 to 3 solid months in the big leagues to know if you can go into 2022 with him as the starting first baseman, or at the very least a platoon first baseman.
Yep.
And he has still a little bit more development. I think that is the case. But why have they developed guys previously at the big league level and they have chosen not to with him? It doesn't really add up. They chose to bring in Jesus Sanchez now. They did it with Harrison. They did it with Brinson. They did it with Eason Diaz. It is time now for Lewin Diaz to play. And the only reason why he's not is because he has two guys blocking him. So what does that all mean? They've got to move one of the two first basemen out by the 30th of July. They have, if not both, they have got to trade either Aguilar or Cooper. And Lewin Diaz against right-handed pitching in August and September has got to play, has got to get 100 or 200 plate appearances. So we know going into next year what he is. And you may not know in Jeremy in September. September is not a great month to call up guys. The Marlins are going to be playing maybe a lot of meaningless baseball. It's very possible. And then what? You go into next year thinking September was good? Can't have that. So Cooper or Aguilar to me is definitely a possibility. And then you could just take every single player in the bullpen right now and be under the assumption that teams are going to be calling about them. I don't have any other specific information regarding teams, players, or anything else. But the one position that needs to be rectified is that first base position. So for me, in my opinion, with no information at this point, Aguilar or Cooper, they have to sit down in the room, you know, chop it up, put them on the whiteboard, look at the video, go over the last few years and say, who are we trading on the 30th? Because we got to call Lewin Diaz up and we got to play him. We got to know if he's something for next year. The end.
Yeah, learning about Lewin Diaz is important in the second half. I mean, with what we've learned about Jazz Chisholm Jr. and what we've learned about Jesus Sanchez so far in the real competition, because it's important, like you mentioned, how many of the other names that you just mentioned, and Eason Diaz and Lewis Brinson and Monte Harrison and some of these other guys who came up and were sort of forced to develop against big league players, did we see play pretty well in September, but nowhere else? Because September is a different ball game in Major League Baseball. And so you're right. I want to make sure you see Lewin Diaz maybe here at the end of July, throughout August, while there's still important baseball being played and teams aren't coasting, because you need to learn about these building blocks of the future to figure out, okay, what positions do we have stability at moving forward in this build? I think you can feel confident about either second base or shortstop, regardless of whatever you think Jazz is. And I'm of the belief Jesus Sanchez has proved something to me here in this season. But moving forward, you need to see the guys like Diaz, and maybe we should be grateful he's had a little more time to develop at the minor league level. Like you mentioned, you know, Brinson and Harrison and Diaz, who were sort of forced to play at the big league level due to lack of depth, floundered, and maybe this helps Diaz in the long run. But now it's enough sort of sitting around and waiting. You want to see what you have in him.
Yeah. And again, the other positions, as time goes on, we'll get into, we'll see what their thought process is. And of course, I'll ask all those questions on what their thought process is for those trades. They'll probably reveal very little, but that's what I'm here to do, is to kind of sift through that and figure it out. So we'll see what they choose to do and what they choose not to do. But I'm hopeful that they see some of this the same way, where Diaz needs to get an opportunity to play. And as you mentioned with Jesus Sanchez, has he been perfect? No. Has he been great? No. But do you see something there that could be a starter, that could be developed a little with a full spring training? And yes, I do think that there is a chance of that. We don't know, but we're learning. We're finding out right now. Let's do the same thing at first base. That's
exactly all. Exactly. Well, and so now let's take a second here before we wrap up to talk about some of these young guys that were added to the organization through the MLB draft over last weekend. It seemed nationally like a very good draft for the Miami Marlins. Everyone seemed very excited about the players they added. Obviously, Khalil Watson, the shortstop with the first pick, who seemingly, based off all the scouting, slipped quite a bit for the Marlins. Obviously, they drafted Joe Mack and Cody Morissette, Jordan McCants. Craig, what are you hearing back from the Marlins in regards to their past MLB draft and how they're feeling about this one?
Yeah, both inside and out. The Marlins drafts of the last 3 years, probably 2019, 2021, all seem to be very well organized, thought out, and executed. Everyone is grading their drafts every year after they're done very highly. And it's not to say that you can miss on a guy. Like, I don't think anybody expected JJ Bleday to struggle as much as he has, but that's like another part of the equation. That's up to the player. The player has to, take it upon himself. He's got to be developed a little bit. I'm not going to say that the Blade is a bust by any means. He's had a tough year. He hasn't seen big league pitching. He actually looked pretty good in spring training, looked better in spring training than he has this year in the minors. So yeah, they're getting very high accolades again this time around, which is not surprising. Yep. The organization has this part of the process down pat. I really do believe that. I think that this is part of a very solid group of people who know what they're doing, who work really hard at it, and good job by the Marlins organization in that sense. Now, in terms of the players this year, what's really amazing is you know, going into some of my off the record conversations that I had about players and possibilities, Watson, I was told Khalil Watson going into the draft was a no chance for the Marlins. Right. He would not get to where the Marlins were at. So to see him available at that point was incredible. Now, in some of my follow-ups with other people around baseball, the same reason the Marlins took him is the same reason that that other teams did not, where there were conversations had previous to where the Marlins took him that other teams thought that after that conversation in that 4-minute clock that they thought that they could not sign him. So what changed with Miami as opposed to some of the other teams? That's not a conversation that I'm privy to. So I don't know. We're going to find out in the next couple of weeks because this deadline is, I believe, in August. It's coming up very soon. I don't think that they have months to get a guy signed. I think it's like weeks to get a guy signed now. So they have definitely some work to do. Kimming met with the media very briefly after the draft and said that it was not going to be a standard signing and that they were hopeful that they could get a deal done. Was I surprised to hear that? Sure. I thought that this would have been absolutely, we're going to get it done. And I did not get that vibe, but I still have to believe that if you're going to take that player in that spot after other teams have passed on him for the same reasons, then you have to feel that you're smarter than everybody else. So I am going to be on the positive side of this for now and assume that before the deadline is up to sign the player that Watson will be part of the Marlins. This is the amazing part. They went in knowing that the Joe Mack was the catcher that they wanted.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so that's who they ended up with. I was not surprised with that pick. The infielder from Boston College, Morissette, was exactly who they wanted. And that's who they took too. So I gotta say, when I saw some of the players come off the board, I was like, wow, like this plan is
like they nailed it.
Yeah, like this plan is getting executed. And then some of the later round picks were really interesting as well. There was a player very late to go in the draft that was playing like not even in this country. They don't have a lot of information on him and he was scouted elsewhere. I forget what the name, it was a really interesting story. One of their later round picks where they took him. Noah Williams.
Yeah. From Everett Community College. Sorry.
He played in Slovakia for the Swiss national team and they really just didn't have a lot of background and like a slim chance that something like this can work out. But I think they're really excited with some of these late picks and some of the early picks. And look, there are a lot of people who are more educated on this than me, but I can tell you that what's so impressive is, and again, when I'm told like, okay, like, you know, off the record, like here are some of the names or here are some of the players that are potentially being looked at from the organization. And when some of the agents that are representing these players, when I speak to them, hey, we've heard from the Marlins, and then they take those guys. I'm like, wow, like they ended up getting who they sort of wanted here. So again, we'll have to see, but it's all about Watson. Let's be honest, in the first round, they got to sign him. That's what's going to make the draft boom or bust. And assuming they do, then we can start evaluating the talent there. But a plan that was well thought of, well executed again for them. Two players from 2020 in the Futures game on Sunday. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. They have this part of the organization down. They got to get the rest.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see the Marlins adding so many highly touted players to that farm system, where I think it was Fish Stripes last week who released an article basically saying there could be seven different guys or, you know, five or six different guys within the organization who could easily be touted as number one prospect within the organization, because there's just so much raw talent there now with Watson and Cabrera and Meyer and Eater and Blade and all these guys within the organization. But obviously, until you start seeing him at the major league level, you know, the questions can still remain. But I particularly, just with strategy with the draft, something I really liked was that you saw all these high school kids with sort of the high ceilings drafted early by them, and then a run of like college blue blood programs that, you know, just a number of guys who played at South Carolina and Alabama and, you know, UCLA and all these schools that, you know, traditionally have been baseball powerhouses. And so it just makes you feel comfortable, even if it's not, you know, there's so little that you and I can know. We're not DJ Svilik sitting there scouting in the same way. So just to see the comfort of some of these bigger programs always yeah, is a nice
and
little
And again,
addition.
With me, like there are so many smarter people out there than I am with evaluating the draft. People are asking me like, how do you think they did? Well, what I do is I look at what everybody else said. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't know the answer. I'm just basically going off everybody. This is not something that's tangible for me. I didn't see these kids play, but I could tell you two things that make me think they do a good job, which has happened now 3 straight years. Number one, they go in there with a plan. There are some players that I hear in terms of names. We're going to get this guy, number one, and they do.
Yep.
So that tells me that the plan was executed. That's number one. Number two, I read the reports from everybody else after the draft is over, and they all have the Marlins getting a B, B plus, A minus, you know, and then what do? I say, well, they must have done well. If the industry thinks they did well, they must have. So if the group think is all the same, who am I to say that they did poorly? But again, this draft in particular is all predicated on signing this kid. Like, that's make no mistake about it. That is the draft, because when you stake everything on making sure that gets done, it's going to have to. So that's another story that we'll have to follow here over the next couple of weeks. Fun. We got a lot to cover the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, everybody, make sure that you're tuning into our episodes over the next couple of weeks, because this will be a lot of information for you. And by next week, we will have a new presenting sponsor for you guys to check out. So, you know, Good. Keep an eye on that one. That'll be fun. But Craig, as we head into this doubleheader this afternoon with the Phillies and a 4-game series, 7-game road trip, all this coming out into the second half, any last thoughts as we sort of begin this 13-game sprint by the Marlins to try to make something happen before July 30th.
A lot of fans listen to this. If you're a fan of the Marlins, totally cool. I thank you guys for listening to this podcast. Hopefully for your sake, they go 13-0 or 12-1 or 11-2 or whatever is the case. But keep in mind, be realistic, try to be impartial, try to understand where things are moving forward. Your eyes have not deceived you from watching since April. The team is mediocre, if not worse, at best. They're going to need an epic run here to stay in it the next 2 weeks. It is highly unlikely because they have not had an epic run over the entire season. And hopefully you can see, as a fan, you can sort of see through this and understand where they need to go come July 30th. And hopefully that builds for 2022, because as I've said a million times before, when the Marlins are good, it makes this podcast good. More people listen, more people want to advertise. We have a vested interest in the team's success because it means our success too. But as always, we're going to keep it real. And with that, have a great weekend, Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. And Swings and Misses fans, enjoy this weekend of Marlins baseball and the beginning of the series next week with the Washington Nationals. We will be back next week to be discussing the trade deadline, Khalil Watson and his possible signing, and everything moving forward with the Marlins. For now, continue to support us by following at Swings and Misses on Twitter and subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast. Thank all of you and have a really wonderful weekend.
The minute you step behind the wheel of an all-new Toyota Tundra TRD Pro, you'll know it was made to make a statement, because it's a beast. Equipped with a 437 horsepower iForce Max hybrid engine, made for making power moves. Plus, available cockpit red interior with a technical camo pattern made to deliver a red carpet-like experience. Not to mention an in-grill LED light bar made to make you stand out from the crowd. The all-new Tundra TRD Pro, made to make a statement. Toyota, let's go places.